This is the Porter Pickups Tonecast, episode 17. Today we'll be talking with Rick Matthews of Matthews Effects. I'm Brian. I'm in the studio here with Derek. Hey, Derek.
What's up?
You sound terrible today.
Yeah, I'm pretty rough, so right. I'm going to keep this to a short
a short hello. Bit. All right, well, I got your back today because
thanks.
A couple months ago I was dying and you had my back. So we'll be fine.
I'm just going to play the producer game and sit here silently in the corner and watch the little waves.
Perfect, yeah. Sounds good. Well, we had a great sit down with Rick Matthews. Not really sit down, but kind of a regular interview with Rick Matthews of Matthews Effects. So excited about that conversation, and we'll go ahead and play that interview now. All right. Well, hey, Rick, we're glad to have you on the show today. This is the Porter Pickups Tonecast. I've known Rick for a little while through the industry. We've met at a few shows, and so just want to say, hey, welcome. Welcome to the Tonecast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I gotta say, Rick, as we ended the show last week, we had a little typo, we had a little mess up between Derek and I, so we're going to go ahead and play that for you so you can hear kind of what happened last week heading into this week's show. So you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Ongoing. Next week we've got an interview with Rock Matthews of Matthews Effects. That'll be a fun
Rick,
one.
Rick Matthews. I wrote Rock on that.
See, this is where
Rock Matthews. We'll have to introduce him as Rock Matthews next week.
There we go.
See, I'm sorry.
This is why we should talk beforehand because I don't know all these cool people yet. So well,
that's one of those things where I was like, you said it. I'm like, why did you say Rock? And then I look down at the thing that I typed and it says Rock. So that is completely my fault. And Rick, if you're listening to this one, we apologize. Hopefully he still wants to be on the show
wonderful.
Next week.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, now that I'll meet Rick and Brian just wrote down the I in there just in case later.
Oh man.
No. That's wonderful.
All right. So first of all, what's your reaction to that, Rick?
I love it. I feel like I'm now Rock Matthews. Like I feel like I was always Rock Matthews my entire life, and now I know who I am.
Perfect.
You need to come out with like a really high gain Rock Matthews pedal.
Yeah.
I like
that's
it.
Or that's going to be like my alter ego. Like there's going to be, I'm going to start doing videos and stuff like that with Rock Matthews.
If the pedals don't work out, you could be a wrestler and that could be your like wrestling name, Rock Matthews.
Totally.
So yeah, we apologize for that. Derek and I were talking. He's like, "Should we play it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he'll like it. It's just one of those like, you know, we do the podcast early in the morning sometimes, and you know, it's like
that's not
my worst typo I've ever made. So I think I feel okay calling you Rock instead of Rick. So
yeah.
Well, again, thanks for being on the show. As we kind of get into the bulk of the interview here, why don't you just kind of tell us a little bit about you and your company and kind of just what you do for those who don't know, or just those who maybe never have heard you talk about your company.
Yeah. So, I started a pedal company and it's called Matthews Effects, and we make guitar pedals, and I'd like to think they're, you know, unique in our own way. You know, we definitely try to make things that are different than what everyone else is doing out in the market, you know, just to try to kind of fill those voids for those players who don't have pedals that really speak to them. And then also just to have stuff that's, you know, inspires you to look at the way that you're making music differently. You know, we try not to just produce the same thing everyone else is doing. So, I mean, that's kind of our goal, and kind of what we do is try to do fun stuff that's unique.
Very cool. And so how long have you been doing Matthews Effects?
Oh, man. I think it's been going on 4 years now. It feels so much longer. It feels like it's been forever. But yeah, I think it's just been like 3 to 4 years, the last 3 to 4 years.
Nice. Yeah, I think we met at probably one of the Seattle guitar shows. I think that was where we met in the past. Is that right?
Yeah, it was either the Tacoma show or the C-Tech show. I'm not sure which one it was, but
okay. Nice. Yeah, it's been cool to kind of follow like your company and see some of the things. I know we've done some promotions in the past, and that was kind of fun. Like a lot of people got to, you know, get your pedals as part of a package deal with the pickups. And so we've had you on the list to be a podcast guest. And so it's nice to finally get you in the rotation. I'd love to ask you, we ask almost every interview person this question, which is kind of, we've realized too, it's like, you know, the reason we all got started in guitar is some different kind of inspiration. So if maybe you could tell us kind of why you picked up the guitar and what inspired you to play guitar.
Yeah, I mean, mine is kind of a classic, I don't know, I guess a classic story, I would think. Basically, like, I grew up in the church, and when I was super, super little, my dad was a pastor. So I was always in, like, the church whenever worship music was getting played and stuff like that. So from a super, super young age, I was always interested in guitar, which was really weird to my family because nobody in like my family history is musical at all. Like my mom's like really into genealogy and no one like was ever a musician in like either family trees. So I was just always from a super young age really, really interested in guitar. And I feel like everyone has a story, but I saw Back to the Future and that scene where he's playing the 335, like, was stuck in my brain for years and years and years and years. And so I always just wanted to be Johnny B. Goode, you know?
Nice. Nice. I think we've talked to a few people that like that's one of those like burn in your brain kind of moments. Yeah. Where you're like, that's sweet. That's awesome. It's very cool.
That was like Gibson should have paid them a lot of money for that scene because I feel like inspired so many guitarists.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. It's like that 335 is burned in my memory too, mm-hmm. I think from a yeah. very young age.
And now you make little boxes that people push and they do that same thing and blow up, yeah. blow up speakers and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about kind of as you got into, you know, from the guitar inspiration to picking up guitar. I'll ask you real quick before we get to the first or the next question here, but what was your first guitar?
My first guitar was a Arctic White Squire Strat. Well, actually, I would say that was my first, like, serious guitar because, like, my parents tried getting me – they got me, like, a couple acoustics – you know, like started out acoustics when I was really young and I tried to take lessons and stuff like that, but it never really stuck. I think my first guitar actually, and I only recently found this out a couple of years ago, my parents packed on the top of our car when we were moving to Texas from up here in Washington State. And we got to Texas and it was gone. And my parents said, oh, it must have just come undone and like fell off or something. That's so sad. But recently I found out that when we stopped at one of the truck stops, they just left it on the side of the road because they bought something. Like, I don't know what they bought, but they bought something and they didn't have room for what they bought. So they sacrificed my guitar
that's on tragic. The side of the
road and they just never told me.
Well, that's and brutal.
I know. I was so traumatized by that now that I know that. But yeah, the Squire Strat was like my first serious guitar where I got really serious. And from then on, like I was a guitar player nonstop from there.
That'd be awesome if you could find that guitar someday or figure out like,
I know,
maybe it was some yeah. like up and coming musician that like found that guitar and now he's like famous and
some like deep story. I would love it if it was something like that. Most likely a truck probably ran over it. Yeah, exactly. It's in a landfill.
It's like a home for a couple of birds and a cat or yeah. something. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
That's a crazy yeah. story. So they what did they buy that made them replace it with a guitar?
I don't know. I think it was some type of souvenir type, you know, like something that took up space and they were like, oh crap, we don't have space for it. Well, what can we do to make space? And they're like, well, he's kind of young. This is kind of a cheap guitar. Let's just put it on the side of the road.
That's amazing.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So, but the guitar was on the top of the car?
Yeah. Like it was, I mean, I was so young. I don't even know if it had a case or if it was literally just strapped up there.
Just strapped up bungee cords. It's like, yeah. Look at these freaks from Washington that are moving down to Texas.
Yeah. I didn't have very good luck with guitars early on. I remember like the next year they got me a new one for Christmas. And we like our family tradition is like we open up presents the night before Christmas and then some of them we open Christmas. So I opened the guitar the night before Christmas and I slept in the living room with it. And when I woke up for Christmas, I was super excited, and I ran across the living room and stepped on the neck and just snapped it. Oh. And just broke it. So that was like the worst Christmas of my life.
Oh, man. That's funny. That's amazing. That's a cool
story. I had a rough start. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that at some point you decided to like try it again. It sounds like you probably could have quit at that point. Like,
yeah.
It sounds like in the past, I did some guitar lessons, and I had some students that, you know, they would show up, but they didn't want to be there, but their parents liked the babysitting, I guess. And so, I had a kid that showed up with like an acoustic with a broken headstock, and, you know, opened the case, and he's like, oh, I don't know how that happened. I guess I can't do lessons today. And, you know, it was totally obvious that he like snapped it off in a fit of rage, you know, and it's pretty, that was his last lesson. So that was pretty good. So let's kind of like steer back a little bit to, so, you know, from those crazy guitar stories and getting your first guitar, what about that transition to like doing pedals? How did that kind of come about?
Yeah, it was really kind of a thing I just fell into. I was a really big gear rat. Like, I loved buying and trading and selling pedals, especially like nonstop. And I always had like a big board. You know, I was the guy that was at shows like tap dancing like crazy throughout the entire show because I was using so many different effect pedals. And it really morphed into loving them so much, I wanted to do my own thing and do something that was creative, as kind of a creative expression and outlet. So I started like trying to teach myself stuff. And like when I actually first started Matthews Effects, I was like making switches, which I think a lot of people have done. Like tap tempo switches and mutes and just utility stuff. And I had like a website, but I didn't know how to do marketing or anything like that. And so I think I sold like one. And then buildyourownclone.com, which is a DIY kit company, moved to where I live. And they had a posting for that they were hiring. And so I was like, oh, that'd be so awesome. And so I ended up applying, and they hired me. And Keith, the owner, basically trained me and taught me a ton of stuff on pedals. And I kind of went from there to teaching myself more and more and more, and built off that. And everyone in the pedal community is so like supportive and friendly that I'm always able to like ask questions and be like, hey, you know, like, how are you guys doing this? And so a lot of people have poured into me as far as how circuits work and everything. So I've been super lucky.
Very cool. That's awesome. I think it's always interesting, not only the guitar inspiration thing, but it's also fun to hear how people turn that into, you know, their business as well. Because, you know, we definitely have a similar story like that. And almost everyone we talk to is kind of that same way. It's like you get started on it and you're like, man, maybe I can, you know, make a few bucks on this and pay a bill or something like that. And so that's very cool. So, you know, when you make pedals, do you kind of you mentioned a little bit kind of you're looking for something that's not just the same as everything out there. Do you kind of have a, like a build philosophy, or when you're coming out with something new, like how do you approach a new design, or, you know, just what's the foundation of kind of each of your pedals?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's definitely the interest aspect of it is usually things that I'm interested in, or that I like playing personally. And I think a lot of builders are like that. But then I really try to, like my build philosophy is like, all right, be different. You know, try to be a leader in your field. I don't want to, not that there's anything wrong with making Tube Screamers, right? Tube Screamers is an awesome pedal, awesome circuit, but there's so many of them out there. Like, if you're going to make one, you need to do something that is wildly different or that sets it apart from everything else in the market. And for me, that's a design philosophy, but it's also just kind of a marketing philosophy. You know, like if you want something to be successful, it needs to be able to stand on its own feet. It needs to do its own thing. So I really like to, I've learned to trust the gnawing at the back of my mind. Like I'll design something, and then I'll be like, oh, this sounds really good. Like, I really like it. But there's always that gnawing in the back of the head. It's like, okay, how can I push that just a little bit farther? How can I change it in a way that people are going to be like, oh, that's different? Or, you know, that kind of inspires me in a different way than just the normal everyday thing they're seeing from everyone else.
It's very cool. I think it's like kind of refreshing, especially, you know, I'm sure that you think about this too in your industry, just with the, with pedals specifically. I mean, there's, we've talked about it even on our last show, is like in the gear industry, there's so many choices. There's so, you know, there's so many drive pedals, there's so many delay pedals, and it's like a great time to be a guitarist. But as a business, you're looking for ways to kind of stand out in what you create. And so that's really cool that you shared that, because I think that's probably, I mean, you could probably point to that as one of the reasons why it's a real job for you, I would assume.
Yeah. And it's really easy to get excited about like something like a new creation and just want to like get it out, you know, like, oh, I just want to share this with everyone because it, you know, like, oh, I love it so much. But like, I've really learned to sit on it and to play it over and over and over again and just really let it kind of grow from just being that initial like, oh, it works, it sounds like I want it to sound, you know, like, okay, well, is that enough for it to just, you know, to just sound good?
Definitely. Well, speaking along those lines as well, do you have any new products that either just came out, or if they're not out yet, you probably can't spill the beans, but what are some of your newer products that you're really excited about?
Yeah, you know, recently in the last couple months, we came out with the Architect version 2, which people have been really liking, and it's definitely my favorite drive right now. It's a Klon-inspired overdrive with a 3-band EQ, which I think I'm fairly certain we're the first ones to do that, which seems like a no-brainer to me, because for people who either like or hate the Klon circuit usually revolves around the mid EQ on it. So having a variable, you know, mid boost or cut seems like a no-brainer to me. And it really opens up the circuit in new ways, which are really cool. And then we also came out with the Surgeon, which is our delay. And it has three different modes of delay, kind of gives you three different flavors of delay. You can do some cool stuff with it. People have really been liking, there's one of the modes is like an auto filter sweep that goes through the delays. So you can do some really cool different stuff, different sounding stuff. And then, yeah, we have a bunch of new stuff coming out. Like, I have a bunch of new designs. And all I can really say about them is that they're new products in new areas of the market that we don't currently have products. So
very cool.
It's not, yeah, so it's not more gain, you know, we're not just coming out with like more gain pedals. We have some more new modulation stuff that's going to be coming out, which we're really excited about.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's always kind of cool to see like that creative stuff keep flowing. Do you have like a, do you always have like a set number of pedals you want to release every year, or does it just kind of come as you have the inspiration, or how does that normally work for you?
Yeah, I actually kind of have the opposite problem. Like, I have to limit myself because I'm kind of like an idea guy. Like, I constantly have ideas that I'm like sketching down and writing down. I'm like, oh, this would be so cool. And I'm always developing new projects on the side. And so I actually have to limit myself and be like, okay, I can't come up with too much, you know, in too little bit of time, because it's just too much stuff for our customers. But yeah, I'm always actually kind of nervous that I'm like, oh, what if I just run out of ideas? What am I going to do then? But I've been lucky so far that I just always seem to be having new ideas, new stuff to play with.
That's great. So, as far as like when you started, is there anything you'd go back and like tell yourself now from what you've kind of experienced as a business owner in the gear world? Like, would you go back and smack yourself about something, or what would be something like that you might say to your former self?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, one of the things I learned was that whole build philosophy of, you know, make sure you're doing something different, make sure you're doing something that is unique. And I learned that kind of halfway when I did a rebranding of my brand. I got rid of a lot of products and then revamped some different products. But also, yeah, just going back to like taking my time and not rushing, not letting that excitement of just wanting to get a product out as fast as possible. Because even when it's like a finished product, I'm really bad at like keeping secrets. Like, I love to just like, oh, it's so cool, I just want to share it. And then I'm like, okay, no, I need to stop. I need to have like a marketing plan. I need to get videos and demos ready. you know, product pictures. I need to get the description ready. You know, you got to get all those aspects of ready for a product launch instead of just being like, hey, here's a new pedal. It's really tempting to just like share pictures and stuff like that rather than putting into a big production of the launch.
Nice. So what about, I mean, you're obviously all about Matthews Effects gear, but tell us about some of your favorite, your other favorite gear that you have, maybe amps, guitars, kind of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I recently got a American Vintage reissue Tele, 62, I think, that I really like. I've been playing that a lot lately, but it's also my most recent acquisition, so that's probably a big part of it. I really like that Tele, and I've been playing. I also recently, in the last like 5 months, I think, I got a all original 57 Vibrolux, which is crazy cool. It sounds so good. It was a crazy cool deal that I got. It was like sitting in this guy's barn for all these years. It's barely been played. But as far as like recent stuff, other builders are making. I just got a Cali 76. Big box compressor, and that I've just been loving. I've been playing that nonstop. It's like my always on compressor, and it sounds so good.
That's awesome. That's one pedal that's out there that I've never gotten to put my hands on, but I've really wanted to try it out.
Yeah, I had never played one before, but I'm really particular on like my compressors, which is really funny that I've never gotten around to actually making one or designing one. But a lot of people really recommended one, and I was like, they're kind of expensive, but totally worth it. Totally worth it. I don't regret it at all.
That's awesome. Well, you know, last week we just finished up a podcast. We kind of called it the State of the Gear Industry. And it was just kind of our take on where we felt like we were sitting in the industry and maybe some changes that have, you know, we've seen come and go, or just, I don't know, a lot of thoughts in that way. And we were wondering, you know, where do you see the industry headed, you know, maybe in this year and beyond? Are there trends that you're seeing pick up, or, you know, things that in the time you've been a business have you seen really change or be affected?
Yeah, you know, I think we're on the, as far as pedals go, we're at the point where we've seen so many homebrew companies, which is how I started, you know, just in the basement. We've seen so many of those companies, and there's been some awesome examples of companies who have stuck around, or even ones that haven't stuck around, but, you know, they conducted great business. But then we've had so many bad examples that I think customers are a lot more guarded on who they're giving their business to. And they're also wanting more of a complete package. They want, you know, something that's really well produced, that looks good, that sounds good. And I feel like that's really changing what companies that we're now seeing are being able to stick around. You know, it's less like it used to be where, you know, people would just like hand draw labels on pedals, and, you know, they were this mythical thing, you know, that were like super rare. Now you have to like have awesome graphics and great packaging, and which I think is great. I think it's really, it kind of has weeded out the people who don't want to put that time and effort, or they're not as serious about having a company, which has, I think, has been good for the industry. But I'm also really interested to see where it goes in the next 5 to 10 years, because we're seeing just of how the technology is changing as far as the internals on pedals. It's really changing. I think it's becoming less accessible to people, you know, because we have these old packages as far as like through hole, the whole debate between through hole and SMT. SMT is just really where technology is going, which I think is less accessible to like the smaller DIY company. So it'd be really interesting to see like how many small companies we actually have, or how easy it is for someone to start a new pedal company in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've seen, like, with all of that, you feel like you've kind of seen an effect on your own business as well, as far as, like, have you felt like you really need to keep up with presentation and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's more of like I've seen the business positives. So it's like, oh, like we do better when we do this, you know? So it's like, especially like with doing, like I said, with getting excited about sharing a new product, like I definitely see launches go better when I really take the time and have all this content created and have like these videos created and like a launch video, even more so than just a demo. But like, you know, we try to kind of do like story driven launch videos, or, you know, at least are on topic or on theme with what the pedal is about. When we're creating all that content and creating a big kind of event around the launch, we definitely see a better response than just like, hey, here's a new pedal, you know, check it out. Hope you guys like it, you know, buy it if you like it type of thing.
What about, we've asked a couple of the builder types this question. I was kind of curious to different people's takes, as well as the whole artist dynamic and how you approach that as a company, as far as artist relations, artist endorsements. I know it's a very like sensitive topic for some people. You know, for us, we've kind of gone back and forth on how we offer stuff and how it's presented. So kind of where do you sit on the whole artist end of things?
Yeah, you know, our philosophy has kind of changed a little bit. We kind of change every once in a while. It kind of really is affected by the artists that we're working with. Some artists are really excited about the brand. They really like the product and they enjoy sharing it with other people. And like, those are the artists you want to work with, right? Because it's more than just be, you know, slapping a name or, you know, being able to add them to your website, or then, you know, them like doing one post when they get the product and sharing it. So for me, it really depends on the personality of the artist and the way they present themselves. Because if it's not an active, living relationship, you don't really get that much of a benefit from it. You know, as far as from a business standpoint, I love working with all these, you know, artists that I look up to and admire and everything, and getting to meet them, like that's super fun and everything. But from a business standpoint, if it's not something that's an active relationship, it really doesn't benefit me to, you know, to give you a free pedal or to give you a discount on something.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's kind of, it's interesting. Everyone kind of has like some similarities in their artist takes and then some like differences. And, you know, I think you can go obviously too far one way or the other, where you're like just giving stuff away and hoping that one of those sticks with the right guy.
Yeah.
Or you don't do anything and then no one like recognizes anyone that plays your stuff.
Right.
And so I feel that pull all the time is trying to make those decisions. You know, and there's definitely, you know, it's really nice to have those guys that just love your stuff and they would buy it anyways. And, you know, even the artists that maybe are doing pretty well, but they understand that you are a business as well, and they are willing to pay for the product
yeah.
that you make. And that's really refreshing, I think, as opposed to, you know, the email that comes in, it's like, hey, give me free stuff. You know, it's like, those always don't seem to go as well as they could.
No. And you'll get those from the big, you know, the big players too sometimes, which is always disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you get them from, you know, from the small and big guys alike.
Yeah, definitely. So as far as, I'm curious too as well, as far as like how you sell your products, are you doing a lot direct sales? I know you've got a dealer network and stuff. Kind of how does that typically break down for say like your average year or so?
Yeah, we do basically the hybrid structure, which is we sell direct from our website, but we also have dealers. The majority of our sales go through our dealers. But sometimes we'll do limited offerings, limited runs, sometimes special colors, or we just did a Gold Astronomer, which has a special algorithm. And stuff like that we'll do exclusively through our store, which is always just kind of fun and nice. It's fun for us, but it's also kind of nice to just have that direct relationship with customers also in the buying process. But we love our dealers, and so we have an awesome dealer network. We have awesome people that we work with right now.
That's great. Yeah, it's nice to have kind of a balance of all that stuff kind of as you're getting out there, because there's people that, you know, we certainly enjoy hearing from a customer and delivering them a set of pickups that we get to chat with them about. I mean, it's fun to hear that. It's fun to hear the follow up of, you know, hey, I really loved these in the studio that week. And, you know, you may not get some of those personal interactions when they're buying in the store, because obviously you're not able to track down every single person that buys, you know, some of your gear, but it also is fun to kind of see where they end up and all that as well.
And it's nice with those, because usually the direct sales, I don't know, at least in my experience, are people who are already familiar with your brand, or familiar with my brand. Whereas what's awesome about, you know, the brick and mortar dealers is you're getting exposed to all these different people who aren't familiar with your brand necessarily. And so, you know, that way you're getting to interact with two totally different groups.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if you feel this, we talked about it kind of earlier in the show, but just the amount of stuff that's out there, you know, it's just pretty overwhelming. And anyway, as a gear company, you know, you're thankful for those opportunities where people are out there like spreading your name and, you know, passing out flyers and saying, you got to try this. And it's funny, even through like the increase, you know, we've seen like the increase in social media presence and all that stuff. At the end of the day, the word of mouth still kind of kicks butt, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. And those guys that are just like out there, like, man, I love these. And you know, it's funny from our perspective, because we sell a product that you know, apart from a couple of our pickups, like everything looks the same on stage in your guitar. You know, a set of Strat pickups, you know, from the audience, mm-hmm. they're not going to be like, oh, are those Porter pickups?
Yeah.
So we have this uphill battle, you know, and being that the product that we sell, and even I could see some similarities in yours, unless someone's actually looking at the pedal board that's on the floor on the stage, they may not even know that it's a, you know.
Yeah.
What did he step on? Was that a Matthews Effects pedal, or was it, you know? So it's
kind of. Yeah, totally.
It's kind of an interesting. So, I could see, you know, that being, you know, obviously not knowing the ins and outs of the pedal industry, but I guess that probably speaks back to the graphics and the stuff like that. So you're hoping when they look at someone's pedal board, they recognize the Matthews logo, they recognize the branding of that. Is that kind of the way that you approach that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I feel like we have a unique art style, but definitely it's in the vein of very graphically, graphic design, you know, type of thing, where people can recognize at least like, oh, like, is that, you know, they're like, we get compared to a couple of different other brands that are kind of similar in the art style. But, I work with an artist who hand draws all of our art now, which I love and is super cool. So he draws everything by hand and then uploads it into a computer. So we do have this very unique artistic feel to ours. But then also physically the pedal, the way that our pedals, like we have these offset switches. So our switches are offset to the left side, which also helps, I think, because it's easy for me, at least when I'm looking through pictures, I can be like, oh, like even if it's far away, I can see that offset switch and be like, oh, I think that's one of our pedals. Like, I think that guy is using our stuff. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about being unique and being different. It helps like when you're in a, you know, a big, you know, when you're at a dealer, when there's so many different pedals, even just being physically different, having something that's physically different to where people go like, oh, that's kind of different, or that looks kind of weird, that'd be interesting to try, can be a big asset.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we appreciate having you on the show, Rick. I'm kind of handling all the questions for Derek here because he's hacking over there, but we're glad to have you on the show. I would like to go ahead and share your social media accounts, how people can find you if they haven't found you before, if they maybe want to go see what some of those new pedals are like. Go ahead and share maybe some of those social outlets for us.
Yeah, so it's rockmatthews.com. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so you can check out our website at matthewseffects.com. And all our social media, Facebook, Instagram, is all, you know, at Matthews Effects. So you can catch us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and everything. We're super active on Instagram and Facebook, so you can always catch our new content on there. And then we have a YouTube channel where we post all of our own demos and all our own videos.
Nice. So the whole Rock Matthews thing, we've got to do something with that at some point. Yeah. You know, just
Totally done build on that.
It's gonna be the Porter Pickups Rock Matthews collaboration.
we'll sell like 5 pedals. It'll be amazing.
It'll be
awesome. Well, thanks, Rick, so much for being on the show. I appreciate having you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so that was a great interview we had with Rick of Matthews Effects. On our next show, we're going to be talking about some of our favorite gear. So Derek and I will be excited to share with you some of our favorite individual gear, stuff we have in the shop or stuff we've owned in the past. I feel like it'll be a pretty good show for that. So look forward to having you guys on the show next week.